Hello everyone, welcome back to my podcast. My name's Asmara and I'm your host. We know the title of this podcast is Single Parent Families, but you may not know what it's all about. So my aim with these initial podcasts is to shed positive light on the work of single parent families, particularly at this point, mothers, not ignoring the facts that there are amazing single fathers out there. I'm just so careful of speaking on situations that I have no experience of. I doubt that there's many differences to being a single mother and a single father. However, I think it's always best to allow people to speak for themselves, so I can speak generally about what I know and about what facts are provided on Google and other search engines. But I really want to focus on the mother aspect for a reason, and I'm gonna highlight that reason in the first part of this podcast, and it's to do with access. And access is, you know, it's a very broad term. Access in this sense is about the access that people have to you as a person. So that could be your family, loved ones, partners, children, your neighbours, your community, your workmates, whoever it is that you interact with, you know, these people have access to you. Now, one of the most, I want to use some bigger words, some more fancy words, but I'm just going to use the words that are available to me and that make sense to me. But there's a rare phenomenon in having children with somebody, and particularly outside of a sacred union such as marriage or some strong commitment, you know, decided by contract or words, or, you know, that's been agreed upon by families. I mean, there's many ways of creating sacred bonds with people. But within the single parent culture that I am from, that I'm aware of, you know, I'm from South London, and I'm black. So the culture that I'm aware of, you know, it's a rare phenomenon that we, a lot of the time as mothers, have given access to somebody to create one of the most, I don't know how to put it, but one of the most sacred bonds that can be created, and that's creating a life together. So what you will find is sometimes the two people, the mother, the father involved, may not know each other that well. The families of the two people involved may not know each other that well. They may do. They may have spent evenings together. They may have even taken holidays together. They may have had long conversations on the phone. The families, I mean. And the mothers may know each other. The fathers may even know each other. That's the grandfathers of the children. But what you tend to find is the connection between families that produce single parent households and children who are parented by single parents, the families have very little connection, and yet two people have decided to create a life together, which it provides this lane of access that can cause, I believe, a lot of conflict. So in my case, there was a relationship there, there was a bond there. That bond is a questionable bond. It's something I've spoken about on my YouTube channel. You know, I was very young at the time. He was very young at the time. So my understanding of closeness, connection, relationships obviously has developed. He's probably have too. You know, I haven't had much chance to sit down with him and discuss things like we used to do. But there's also a dynamic. So, you know, there may be one person who leads the relationship, who pushes for a relationship, who maybe doesn't want the relationship as much. So, you know, taking into account all of these different dynamics that can be involved, the bond, the outcome of the bond is different. So you're producing a life based on a bond that may be weak, may be strong, it may be untested, it may be an unbreakable bond, as it is in some cases. And with that being said, that decides the amount of access that you as a mother, you know, so we are speaking about mothers here, that will make you want to kind of like say, okay, we had this bond, we've created this life, but now I don't want you to have access to me. Or now I'm happy about the decision I made and I'll allow you to continue to have access to me, but not in the same way. My perception has changed. My instincts have changed. My understanding of safety, what it means to keep someone safe, what it means to be safe, you know, my needs, my wants, they're all very, very different now. So that's me speaking on my behalf, and perhaps a number being maybe 10 to 15 or 20 girls and women that I have spoken to in similar situations. So maybe once upon a time, you know, they were with somebody who, oh, I don't really know his mum that well, or I don't really get on with his mum that much, but I love him. I love spending time with him. I love the time we spend doing things together, talking about things. We have really quote unquote deep conversations. We've spoken about the future. We know that we want to be together. We're pretty sure that our heads are screwed on and we're heading in the right direction in life. And then all of a sudden, you create a life together, and as a mother, your instincts change. I'm sure that's the same for a dad, but we as a society generally tend to accept that the role of a father is to protect, to provide, to lead. And a mother's also has a similar set of instincts, but I think she projects them in a different way, or she interprets them in a different way. So I can speak for myself, and I could say I definitely thought, okay, I have this small, tiny baby whom I'm so in love with. It's a new type of love that I never could ever have imagined existed. It's one you couldn't teach. It's something that you can only sort of feel or experience once you've had those types of experiences. It's the same as saying, well, you can't become a lawyer until you've passed the bar. It's just, that's how I felt. I felt like I was qualified into something that particularly distinguishable from the bar is it's not taught at university. And I don't know if there's a course around the world where you can become a qualified mother, but you only qualify at that moment and in those early days and in those moments when you bond with your child, and your child is constantly teaching you things throughout your pregnancy, throughout the early days, throughout its life. It's teaching you things. It's looking at you in certain ways. It's sending certain messages to you when it's crying, when it's sleeping, when it's cuddling you, when it's laughing, and you're learning constantly. And just as that child is growing and learning so quickly, so are you. So you're adapting perhaps faster than other people could realize. So it could be that at one time before you're pregnant, you know, your friends would say, oh, she's the life of the party. And as soon as you've had a baby, you know, I don't want to be the life of the party now. I don't even want to go outside. I just want to be a mum. I want to make bottles. I want to fold clothes and I want to clean my house. And you know, that's all about that adaptation, but it's not just about the adaptation. It's about that change of instinct, that change of need, want, and bond structure, and the things that you've bonded with and the things that you believe. So in that case, it's not just the people close to you that you decide you want to have a different type of access to you. It's everybody. It's everything. You know, you might have had a relationship with shopping for clothes and getting your hair and nails done, that you might decide, you know what, I still enjoy those things, but I don't mind if I don't do it this week. I don't mind if I don't go out. I don't mind if I don't get my hair done. It doesn't seem to matter all as much anymore. And that might not be because you don't have a babysitter. It might not be because you don't have the money. It might just be because you genuinely have changed your idea of what it means to be happy, or the things that actually give you joy and fulfillment. You know, and I spoke about fulfillment in my previous podcast, and I will expand on that. But it is a part of access, because we give access to people and things that give us fulfillment. And we would tend to shut ourselves off from something or someone that makes us uncomfortable or makes us feel unsafe. So that brings me back to the single parent family phenomenon. What is happening at that point when a father decides, I don't want you to have access to me anymore? You know, I said at one point, yes, I want to be there. I'm going to be there every day. I'm going to be there for my child. Yes, I want this child. Or, you know, as in some cases, no, I didn't want the child. But maybe you've expressed at some point, yeah, this is what I want to do. But then your mind changes. Maybe the baby's born and you retire to some different place within yourself and you say, I know this was a bad decision. It's a frightful decision. I've decided I don't want to be in this child's life in that same way. I mean, it's not often that somebody wouldn't want to spend time with their child, but that's in an extreme case. But maybe as a man, you decide, you know, this woman that I've had this child with or her family, you know, I don't want them to have access to me. And that's what I can speak on as a mother. You know, at one point it was okay for somebody to be narcissistic towards you, to lie to you, to make you feel unsafe, unstable, unsure. And that was just part of the relationship. Arguing felt safe, you know, as long as you made up and you felt happy and you moved on. But maybe afterwards it became so petty to argue with somebody that you think, you know what, this is actually, it's actually destroying who I am. It's destroying the fiber of my actual being, where I'm trying to be a loving, nurturing person. Now all of a sudden I'm having to sort of endure conflict that makes me feel, you know, not myself, not quite myself anymore. And that's something that I think should be considered in the debate as to why, you know, mothers in particular withdraw from the fathers of their children. And I think the matter of access and those feelings are important, and they're strong feelings, and it does determine people's behaviour on a daily basis, you know. And yes, you know, on reflection, I think that was definitely part of my decision to sort of be like, you know what, this family that I once was comfortable around, now I don't feel so comfortable and safe leaving this harmless child who can't fend for themselves. I don't feel so safe just entrusting them with that, because at one time I've entrusted you with things, and oh, I remember when you lied about that, and I was okay with it in the end, but it wasn't okay. And you know, I don't actually want you to be able to do that to my child, even if you are her father, even if you are her grandmother, even if you are her auntie or uncle. I don't think I want you to treat my child like that, you know. And then the terms of access change at that point, because you're now making decisions as the head of a household and as the CEO of your child's life, their corporation, their business. You become the master of their affairs. So their safety is your utmost concern. And no, I'm not saying, you know, that children from single parent households, that every mother has felt that their child is in danger around their father's family or around their father. But it's those minute instances that can build up that resistance and cause somebody to put up that wall, which may not be broken down very easily, especially if the father or the father's family haven't noticed that change in you. They haven't noticed, oh, actually, you don't feel comfortable around me anymore all of a sudden. You know, they don't acknowledge that once you've had this child, you might change. And maybe when I used to make snide comments towards you, or I used to make jokes that weren't actually jokes, maybe you're not going to find that so acceptable anymore. And that's about accountability. That's about reflection. And that's about moving forward. So, you know, as I said, I'm keen to keep the facts involved. And, you know, I haven't quite considered where the facts come into points about access to a woman and to her child. But what I will say is, looking at that statistics, you know, there aren't as many statistics which separate the life of a woman and her child that's from a single parent household. So we're always looked at as one entity, one unit. And it's not until children are well into their 20s and 30s where they're started to look sort of looked upon as an individual. So it is a hard lesson for a single mother to learn, okay, I am actually carrying this person to a point that maybe I felt I was alone by. Like, I felt like I was alone in my teens. But this person, if you're going to be a good mum to your child or good mother, you're going to be carrying this child well into its 30s. And you may not have had those experiences of feeling safe up until that point. But, you know, I think it's important when looking at the statistics to decide the traits and personality and the life and the experiences of the mother and the child, separate from the child. And I feel like if a mother has been through something, she's experienced poverty, she's experienced a household where she received free school meals, that the child is also looked at the same. You know, the child, before the child has even reached a certain point in its life, it's already described in the same way that the mother is described. And I, for one, can say, like, my daughter, she's very different from me. And she did have a relationship with her dad up until a point, and they're very different from me. They've got very different principles and very different, a very different approach to life. And she is so different. And I'm not going to go into all the minute things that she does that make me feel like, you know, she is her own person, completely different individual from me. But I will say that realizing that has helped me to push her in the right direction towards her own choices and her own decisions. And by the age that I was, you know, she's approaching that age, the age that I was when I had her, she's absolutely nothing like me. And, you know, it's not until that true test of time comes up, you know, is she going to have a baby at the same time that I did and do the same thing? We're not quite there yet to pass that hurdle. But, you know, up until this point, she has been very different from me, and she's been similar as well. But, you know, if we actually take a mother and sort of realise that her decision to restrict access to herself is not the same as her also restricting access to the child. And again, you know, and I'm going to give you an example. I've been told on multiple occasions, the reason that your child's father doesn't want anything to do with you is because he no longer has access to you. And I'm so sure that a lot of listeners will have heard that. If you're a single mother, you will have been told, you know, if you're struggling to have a strong relationship with your child's father, maybe you're not, you know, and that's something we'll come to. You know, it's something that comes up often, and that's about character. That's about the character of the man involved in question. You know, it's nothing to be proud of, you know, but it is a truth and a factor, and it is maybe some people's truth that, you know, if I feel like I don't have access to my child's mother, then I don't want anything to do with the kids. And this is an extreme case, and it is something that I think is disgusting. It's a horrific way to look at children and their mothers, but it is real. It's real, and that's what I'm trying to be in this podcast, is as real as possible. So, like I said, you know, my decision about my daughter's dad was made a very long time before I had my daughter. My situation is a bit of a unique one. I came from a very rough upbringing, a background. And that's not something we're going to talk about in this podcast, but it was a factor as to why, you know, that situation spiraled the way that it did. But his decision not to have a relationship with his daughter is based solely on character. I think he's been delusional about his own mindset. He's been delusional about his involvement with his daughter, and he's not been very honest, you know, and his lack of honesty has been a major, major factor as to why he doesn't have access to his daughter. You know, so I don't want to go too much into my own situation, because this is supposed to be a more generalized overview. But obviously, as we get into the meat of things over the next few podcasts, I do think people would have questions, you know, want to know what my biases are. And that's why it's important for me to sort of talk about the way I perceive single parenting before sort of, like, you know, putting my opinions on all the different types of single parent families that exist. There are bitter baby mums, you know, that's a common one, who stop access to the children because they simply just want to create spiteful situations and do things that are spite fair, you know. I'm not going to lie to you. I have been very close to a lot of women, like, whereby they've told me things they haven't told anybody else in confidence. And I haven't actually come across somebody who's spiteful. I've come across women who would be called spiteful, who, according to the other people involved, you know, they are doing things out of spite. But when I listen to them and when I observe them, it isn't out of spite. You know, sometimes it's mental health, sometimes it's drugs and alcohol, sometimes it's genuinely because they've been wronged and they've never spoken up and because they are scared. So that bitter baby mum thing is very, very difficult for me to kind of, it's a hard pill for me to swallow because I have never seen an example of it. But I can understand a man who's in that situation saying the thing she's doing is a display of bitterness. And that's without everybody knowing everything about them and what they've done and to the other person and vice versa. But, you know, there are bitter baby mums. There are women who are really, really good at, you know, making their children's fathers involved in their family and keeping those lines of communication opened. And there are brilliant grandparents and aunties and uncles who also are fighting to keep those single parent families together and making sure those lines of communication remain open. There are brilliant social workers and judges and magistrates and people who have said very powerful words to women and men and have helped to heal families and make sure that, you know, they stay together. Referring back to my situation, unfortunately, there hasn't been a person who's been able to step in and mediate. So I think, you know, that's the wider context, the wider community involved within single parent families. You know, I'm curious to hear more as well about other people's experiences. Of course, I will be doing my research. I will make sure I bring in, you know, my own research, and I'll bring in other people's opinions, because it isn't just about what I have to say. And it's a very, very, very big topic. It's something that needs hacking away at. It's basically an iceberg and we're at the tip of it at the moment. And again, I'm really keen to reinforce that this is about shedding positive light, approaching this in a negative way and looking at all the things that are going wrong, I don't think is what the topic needs. I think the topic needs to be opened up, and the discussion needs to be based on solutions and based on facts, honesty and truth. And one thing I have seen when I have seen these podcasts online and I have seen tweets and I have spoken to men in person, they are not honest. They are honest to a point. They share their own truth. Likewise with women as well, some of them I find to be more honest when it comes to them being given a platform about why they have restricted access or why there's been complications. I find that a woman can tend to share her opinion in a more understandable, honest way. So they may refer to situations that are like about abuse or being beaten or being harmed or, you know, feeling unsafe. But I will find that the men I speak to won't mention those instances. They will talk about a woman, say she's done spiteful things, but they won't talk about when they've hit her, because there is a massive stigma attached to violence on the male side. So I do want that to be, you know, one of the topics, which is male violence, male aggression. And I'm hoping we could set aside the judgment so that that can be a conversation that can be, you know, properly looked into and properly delved into. Because if a man feels like he's going to be, you know, have stones thrown at him because he admits to violence, that's not going to help the conversation move forward. But I do think that a lot of women, courts, police, social services, all agree that when a man is violent, that is a point where access is restricted. So where you don't hear a lot of men coming forward and saying, oh yeah, I did a lot of bad things to her, where you don't hear that, it's a sign that the conversation is not being made safe enough. So in my case, yes, the access situation is about violence. It's not just about violence to me, it's about violence to my daughter as well. So it wasn't just myself who agreed that he shouldn't have access to her, but I was just talking about some of the things that happened prior to involvement from other people. So, you know, that in my experience, that's a more extreme case. It's a very serious case. It's not necessarily the same as people who disagree from time to time, but still meet up for birthdays, still, you know, have evenings out, still can agree on making plans for children, still can have children over for holidays and the weekends. You know, those are the scenarios that work. And I would like to kind of look into whether, you know, those situations are actually better for some people than other situations or other alternative setups, you know. So the extended families and, you know, the contribution of dads and, you know, the two household upbringing and the three household upbringing that some children have, you know, I know that can definitely make some children very happy, very well-rounded, very relaxed, and parents are stress-free because they've got space, time to grow, time to work on themselves. And that is a very significant aspect of single parent families. It's actually a lot to also do with some of the changes that occurred 20 or 30 years ago when women did start having to go to work and did start, you know, pursuing ambitions, and actually it becoming not very plausible to be running a household but also be having a life outside and contributing to communities. So that is why it should be looked at positively as well, because there are women who have done amazing, amazing things, started businesses, community groups, helped people in need, who would not have been able to do this if the single parent families system and structure wasn't as good as it is. You know, there are women who are literally supporting a lot of others simply because they don't have to go home every weekend and every night and cook and look after children. So we have to shed light on some of those situations as well, because it's not all about abuse and violence and all the rest of the situations that people attribute to single parent families. So that's why I did want to separate today in this podcast the woman and the child. You know, that's what this was about. This was about a woman who 50 years ago may not have been able to leave the house very often other than to collect the children or do shopping, to a woman now who's a CEO, has children, has been a great partner, you know, or wife, has been a great sister, is looking after her parents. And there are so many of us out here that are actually taking care of so many people and taking on communities head on and leadership roles, and we still are raising wonderful and amazing human beings who will go on to do even greater than us. So I don't want the single parent conversation 20, 30 years from now to just be about, you know, children who are running the streets doing bad stuff, and, you know, black families who the dad can't stick around and he can't get a job and the mum can't, you know, things that don't make sense, that are only based on circumstantial and, you know, racist evidence. And this isn't just about black single households, but again, I'm speaking from a viewpoint that I know about. And, you know, this is shout out to all the hardworking women and the hardworking men who have children or raising their children or doing the right thing, are running churches, running community groups, running businesses, got their salons, got their barbershops, you know, starting local groups and fitness clubs and trying to really, really make it travel, see the world, be friends to their friends and still have social lives and still make a name for themselves on social media. You know, big shout out to them, because the world has changed a lot and single parent families get a lot of stick and a lot of blame for things they should not be blamed for, systemic failures that are absolutely nothing to do with individuals who have been trying and always will try for the rest of their lives, you know, and very hardworking people. So I hope that clears that up, what that was about. And, you know, for children, you know, they're very delicate creatures and they're so intelligent that you can't say to a child, you know, your mum grew up in this situation, so you're automatically going to grow up like that. You cannot feel comfortable with yourself talking about a human being like that. This is a life that needs to be explored. Somebody who could be taught that the world is their oyster, they can do whatever they want. So I don't feel comfortable with putting stereotypes and labels on single parent families and the children that come from them, because I've met some amazing children who are absolute lights to their, even their communities, at even a young age, you know, at 5 and 6 and 7 and 8 and 9, 10, they are showing signs that they are strong individuals with minds of their own who can actually go out there and really, you know, build great futures for themselves and their families. So I just think there is an expression about killing the seed before it grows. And that's something that we are doing to these children. And when you see them spiraling, you know, you have to wonder, is it really the parents or is it systemic? Is it the community? Is it the harsh words that people use to talk about people that create these mental health difficulties and these mental health grey areas? And, you know, when the doors are closed in your face before you've even had a chance to sort of prepare yourself, it's very unfair. And yeah, that's me for today on that. You know, please be very mindful when you're talking about single parents and make sure you know who exactly you're talking about. Do your research on a person. And if you, for instance, were to talk about me, I would expect you to know my child, know her personality, know me, know my personality before you speak, because you could never put us in the same, in a category where you're lumping us in with people, because we are both two unique and amazing individuals ourselves. So, you know, I'm speaking from firsthand. And, you know, let's try and do better. Let's try and come together to build single parent families up instead of tear them down, you know. And thank you very much for listening today. I hope you enjoyed this one. Feel free to share, download, follow the channel, because, you know, that all helps me to get paid, helps my channel to grow, helps the conversation to further, helps the discussion to grow. And, you know, hopefully we'll see some more single parents sort of popping up and feeling safe to sort of come out and talk about their experiences. Hopefully to heal some of the situations that I have not, you know, been able to find, you know, peace and growth and harmony. So that's our role as humans, to lift each other up. So yeah, I hope that this podcast has done that also for somebody listening who might be struggling with their single parent experience and their children. I do have a charity situation starting up. It's been in place for some years, and the focus of the charity has shifted over the years. I've always wanted to support communities, but I do have an initiative in place right now where, you know, I would love to support single parent families into university, helping with childcare and helping with funds to start businesses. So, you know, hopefully that is where this podcast will take us, to a positive place and a place of understanding. So I hope you have a wonderful afternoon, rest of the day, rest of the week. And, you know, do something good. Try and support single parent families. There aren't very many outlets you can go and directly support people who are raising children by themselves. But that is something that my charity World Support would like to do. And it's something you should consider doing as well. And have a brilliant, brilliant day. Thanks. Bye.